Thank you, Elaine. I think there's some great observations there about the tensions between boards and management around degree of involvement and key updates and key documents, and also your observations around the way in which organisations are revisiting risk appetite is very, very topical. What I'd like to do now is invite Trevor Matthews up to the podium, and now we're going to switch from a director to a CEO's view. And as most people will know, Trevor is a former CEO of a number of leading organisations and has a strong track record of leading profitable businesses in the UK, Asia, and North America, and of course Australia. And his most recent positions include Executive Director and Chairman of Aviva UK and Aviva PLC, and Group CEO and Board Member of Friends Provident PLC. He has also held a number of past positions with the Institute of Actuaries, being the former President of the Institute of Actuaries in Australia and Chairman of the Financial Skills Partnership in the UK. So if I can invite Trevor up for his perspective, that'd be great.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks very much. It's good to be here and give you my sort of perspective from the role of CEO in different companies in different countries. And also, what I'd like to start by doing is giving you a bit of my view of sort of the history, the way this sort of thing has evolved, and then leave you with two suggestions about how we can make this whole system work better. It's interesting to look back and think about the risk function now, and I think compare it to the audit function. And I was saying to the professor over here earlier today that I was doing a bit of research on this, and the audit function, which has got a lot of parallels, it really came into being in between about 1750 and 1850. When the Industrial Revolution was getting underway. And at that stage, we were very early days for companies, and we saw the separation, if you like, of the management of the company from the owners of the company. And so the audit function was brought into being to check up, to make sure, first of all, that the numbers were right, and also to make sure that the fraud was minimised and all that sort of thing. And that system sort of worked pretty well for really about 100, 150 years. And it's really quite fascinating, I think, now to see this research, this sort of growth, this tremendous take-up of risk management activities right around the Western world as a response, I think, probably to a couple of fundamental forces, the globalisation that's going on, the more complexity that we're all living with, and I think also the faster pace. And, I'm sort of thinking about this and what I've observed personally in terms of risk management over the last 15 or 20 years. And I remember a Canadian, former president of the Canadian Institute of Actuaries explaining to me, that I remember vividly sitting in a bar in Cancun in Mexico in 2002, and he was talking about operational risk and how they've got formulas now to work out operational risk, and that was like a foreign language at that stage. And it's quite interesting to compare that sort of very basic discussion to the sort of discussions that we've heard just a few minutes ago. Risk functions developed pretty well in North America, I remember getting involved in as a manager or as a CEO of subsidiary businesses in developing early risk statements. And then as a board member of Standard Life in Scotland in 2008, or 2006, I suppose it was, really the board was grappling very, very heavily with this whole idea of setting the risk appetite statement. So we have made a lot of progress in a short period of time. However, I still think it's very early days in terms of the evolution and the maturity of this particular movement, if you like. My last significant role was in the UK, where I was chief executive and on the board of Aviva PLC, which is the combination of Norwich Union, General Accident and Commercial Union. So three big companies thrown together. And if you talk about the pendulum swinging, I think the global financial crisis really heightened the need for more effective risk management. There's been a lot of activity, a lot of regulatory drive, not just from APRA, of course, but the Solvency II regime in the UK, which we could spend a whole day talking about. And I found myself there in charge of this business, which had a wide range of products, life insurance, health insurance, general insurance, all the different distribution systems you can think of. So very complex, big business, I don't know, about 14 million customers, 19,000 staff. And I'll never forget the first meeting I went to of the board of the UK company, not the PLC board, and the risk report came out for reading, a bit like Elaine has talked about, and I joke not, it was 417 pages long. I mean, it was just absurd. I remember getting up on the platform and saying, thanks very much for this report, and dropped it down, and it went off like that. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And you can see pendulums far too much much that way. And so I think all companies have been through that, probably been through that evolution, and now it's got to come back. And we've got to get to a position where the risk reports are very meaningful, they are very succinct, and they really do help inform management decisions. I think the communication, I mean, what we did in that circumstance, believe it or not, very trivial idea, I suppose, simple idea, is we said that in future any board report can be no more than 4 pages. I mean, that might sound a bit trite and a bit trivial, but that's what we did. And we drove that through very hard, and what we found then was, of course, we'd get a 4-page board paper with lots of appendices. We said, no, that's no good. And then my risk colleagues were very clever. They'd come up with all sorts of different risk papers, each of them only 4 pages long. But the message gradually got into the system. In terms of suggestions, I think it's important for the risk practitioners, of whom we've got a lot of experts in the room, to really step back and try and understand your place in the whole hierarchy of things. I noticed a very interesting article by a fellow Dave Ingram, former president of the Society of Actuaries, in the I think it was the June-July version of the Actuary just recently, where he's a little paper called ERM in the Hierarchy of Corporate Needs, and he used the analogy of Maslow's hierarchy of human needs to the corporate needs. And he pointed, according to him, and I think there's a lot of sense in what he said, he says that the first need for an organisation that wants to be successful is to develop an attractive product, something that somebody will want to buy. That's number one. The second is to be able to manufacture the product and make a profit, because if you can't make a profit, your business is going to go. The third is to get a system working out so that you can repeat the process and you can repeat the sales and keep the organisation going. And then to improve the value of the organisation, you pull those various levers in different ways. It's only then that you get to ERM or risk management. And that, it's all about this sort of fourth level need of defending and preserving and maintaining that position, not subjecting to stress and strain. And I think that's quite a sobering thought. I mean, I think we can get carried away. That certainly those technicians at Aviva in the UK did get carried away when they produced that 400-page report. And we have to pull back from that and understand our role in the realm of things. I've been in a number of discussions where the role of risk management's been very, very helpful in terms of providing a common language, a common framework for evaluating different trade-offs, as you might pull some of those different levers to improve and protect the value of the organisation. My first suggestion is we've got to remember our place as we go into this and this risk management business evolves further forward. And the second message is that simple old one that keeps coming back for all people like us about the importance of communication. We've really got to work very, very, very hard to get that communication going at all levels in the organisation. You've got to get communication coming up so that you're spotting the bad things and the difficult things, and that's not simple. We've heard about that in terms of culture earlier, but you've also then got to work very hard, and when you get that very short opportunity in front of the members of the board, to put your case and put it very well. A good paper, good succinct paper, drawing out the key issues and then presenting it very, very well. That's absolutely vital. Thank you.